Hasta el mañana.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Good morning, honorable members. Advocate, good morning, and your team. We are highly challenged today, and we're going to try that within what we can, we're able to do our work. Highly challenged due to the fact that there's members who will want to leave earlier, because their flights, you know, staying in provinces which actually are a bit rural, there's only either one flight or two flights, and therefore if you miss those ones, you become very challenged. I am going to request the advocate. You have members of the board here?
Yes,
sir. Yes, and your honorable member of the board, to kindly make a presentation for 20 minutes. I think we have engaged so much with yourself in the past, and therefore we are very clued up to critical issues that you have. We would request you to please deal with the matters that you believe we haven't touched on, as we were dealing with your parastatal, and then we should be able to move forward. Having said that, I'll give you 20 minutes for presentation. I'm also going to request members that I'm going to be giving you 30 minutes to engage with the presentation in terms of discussions and questions that needs to be put forward, so that we are able to deal with the matters, so that at least we are able to work and have a quorum before members are able to leave. On that note, welcome to the chairperson of the board. Yeah, let me give it to the member of the board or of RTMC to indicate who will be making a presentation, maybe to even have a few words to the portfolio committee. You're heartily welcomed, members of the board. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and the members of the portfolio committee. Honourable members, we are accompanied by two board members. We have the chairperson of strategy, Mbeki Matabate. We have the chairperson of Mbeki. And we have the chairperson of REMCO, Mthembeka Mdlulo, accompanying us. In our midst, we have the CFO chair. We then have strategy. We have the secretariat of the board. And I was tasked to lead the presentation, but the board members are here. We've engaged with this presentation. They're quite a fair with our collective presentation. Chair.
Advocate, before you continue, I want to applaud you for one thing. You are the only man here on this row with ladies, and it's a scarce commodity that you find. I really, really would want to congratulate you for that.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, we are humbled by the portfolio committee having made us to come and present and deal and tease the challenges that we're confronted with. But as nature will then have it, Chair, we're not going to delay. We're just going to touch on three critical issues just to save the portfolio committee time. The change in terms of our strategic approach and the priorities. We have ensured that our priorities are informed, particularly by the National Development Plan, in particular the Decade of Action for Road Safety 2011 and 2020, we dovetail the two here, Chair, what will be very key is the issue of the professionalization of the police service, and we capture the police service very clear. It refers to the traffic law enforcement. That will be on slide 3. But also, to ensure that we strengthen our multi-agency and corruption system. I will just touch on those, but key to it is the promotion of health. But in the promotion of health, you then have the reduction of accidents, injuries, and violence by 50% from 2010 going forward. Those are the key issues that focuses on our road safety as an entity. In the issue of strengthening our multi-agency and anti-corruption system, to us, Chair, what begins to appeal is primarily the intensification of fraud and corruption, as well as monitoring and investigations on the DLTCs and also the VTCs. This relates to the issuance of the roadworthy certificates as well as the driver and the learner license, which is plagued by fraud and corruption, hence the unprecedented escalations of accidents on our roads. It's primarily from that point. So our focus is going to be in there to improve the quality of drivers. It's our view that if we can deal with the fraud and corruption at the DLTCs as well as the VTC, we'll then have dealt with 50% of our challenges. Chair, when the chairperson and the committee has time, we'll appreciate one day to come and present to the portfolio committee showing what we're unearthing in the DLTCs. For instance, where the allocated time for a person to acquire a learner's license is minimum 45 minutes. But what we unearth in various DLTCs and VTCs, you'll find that the person acquires a learner license in 5 minutes simply because they've been given the questions and they're shown how to answer these issues by our traffic officers. Then it also shows you some of the applicants who are writing these examinations not doing anything for 30 minutes until the traffic officer comes through and shows that particular person. So it's our view that once we can deal with the scourge of corruption both at the VTC and DLTCs, we'll have dealt with the majority of the problems. Chair, we are keen in focusing on this because we believe that the amount that we are paying through RAF as government, which is per month $2 billion, and having a shortfall of $306 billion, and having made a study together with CSIR that informs us that the cost of crashes on our roads cost the government $149 billion per annum, it's quite scary. So that's the focus that we're beginning to deal with. But, Chair, the other issue that we're dealing with, that we're focusing on, particularly informed by the 9-point plan, is the training of the traffic officers. The focus is on the quality of the law enforcers that we want to produce. We'll know that the training of the traffic officers is currently a year. Leave the training aside, but what is the qualification? The qualification is NQF level 4, which is an equivalent of grade 12. So the traffic training has never been professionalized, and we never dealt with the quality of training. Hence the introduction of NQF level 6. Beginning this year, June, we are now introducing the qualification of NQF level 6, which is going to take the traffic officers 3 years training. When they come out of the training, the first production is going to be in 2020. So post-2020, there will be no one who's trained on the 6 months or 12 months training. We now want to deal with the quality in that environment. The topical issue, Chair, that is also bringing some glory and hope home is the issue of the inequities. We have now closed the chapter, but the challenges have just begun. Even having taken over the inequities, we are still in court. They've taken us to court, also claiming that government cannot run the system. They are averring that there are a number of complaints, people complaining about the service in relation to the inequities. But the second issue is the taking over of their staff complement. But the key issue is, since 2005, we have never had the development of the INATIS. The INATIS, it's at its embryonic development of 2002 to 2005. So people that have been running this system has never further developed the system. They just maintained and ensure that the system is operational. So there's going to be a revolution within that environment, ensuring that we begin to develop the system to cope up with the challenges of the current scenario. Chair, this is one of the pictures that is so good, and we want to give thanks to the leadership of the department, in particular the minister and all this. The board that we have, it's made up of a various skills. We have Austandi, who's a human resource specialist. You have Professor Mphahlele, who's an IT guru, and it became relevant in relation to the change of the core function of the corporation. We have Ms. Ndlula, who's a lawyer in a various specified field. We have Ms. Iverta, who's also a financial guru, and she has been the CFO of Parliament. So she is in the board. She brings board expertise into it. We have Auspinki, who's a specialist in law enforcement. We have Dr. Tebe, who's also a specialist in the law enforcement. You also have in our Mr. Majavu, who's also bringing the law expertise amongst the members of the board. And indeed, the last person that I did not mention happens to be Mr. Homu, who's also in the legal fraternity. Why we're putting this chair for the purpose of this committee is that we have the myriad expertise that dovetails with the core functions as enunciated within the Road Traffic Act. So there has been like hybrid and hegemo. Chair, I've touched on these issues. We, in our group, chairperson, there are three issues that have not been given back to us in terms of the enabling legislation. Those that are covered in red. The vehicle and roadworthy testing and driver's licenses, and vehicle registration. This is an issue that we are now engaging the department. Now that we have taken responsibility of the INATIS, the integration of the powers that are remaining with the department becomes very critical and key, and also to deal with integration and avoid fraud and corruption. Chair, we have dealt with the issue of the National Road Safety Strategy. The Cabinet has approved it. We're implementing it this year. One of the issues that would be a far cry will be an issue of the funding of this strategy. But the second issue, Chair, we've put in the review, the Traffic Law Enforcement Review Committee, simply because we're saying, let's follow the best practices that have been followed by the defense. The defense went through the defense review process to ensure that we integrate law enforcement from the local government sphere, metros, municipalities, national, as well as provincial administration, so that we have a seamless profession of the law enforcement. So the review committee is currently in operation. They have now seen 6 provinces. They're going to complete the 3 provinces and redo the process again to inform the countries where to go. I'm teasing on these 2-3 issues, Chair, because of time. One of the issues I've dealt with, but one of the core issues is the involvement of the youth in the road safety program, because most of the people that are affected by fatalities on the road, it's our youth. So we have ensured that we developed a youth structure, both at national and provinces. You have the national road safety youth structures that are dealing with the programs in relation to them. And the 2 key ones, Chair, on the road safety is the review of the K53. And I think most people got their license through K53 process. K53 in the current scenario, it's now meaningless. it does not have any meaning. So it's important that we then begin to change the content of the K53 to ensure that it's in harmony with the challenges that we have. And of course, one of the key issues is the formalization, regulation, and the development of the occupational curriculum for driving school instructors. Currently in South Africa, you can open a driving school if you just have money without any curriculum. So we're beginning to develop that curriculum because that's the gap that we have identified that it's missing in the whole issue. Chair, I think I've touched on the key issues. In slide 20, we're just going to take to the issues that are going to be key projects. One is the finalization of the 24/7 shift system. This is the issue where we're saying that post the office hours, there's absence and conspicuous absence of traffic officers. So we're dealing with the DPSA to ensure that we then bring the issue of the 24/7 being regulated throughout the country. Despite the fact that the Public Service Act says that the power is with the provincial HODs, but we have seen the reluctance within the HODs to begin to put this into process. So we have roped in DPSA to ensure that it becomes a bargaining chamber matter that all of us agree that traffic officers should work 24/7. One of the key issues is also the promotion and the implementation of SANS 39001. It's a very key issue. It will take us more than half a day to explain on this matter, but we believe in the request that we have made to the committee that we want to give and appraise the committee of the developments around these areas. It will be one of those issues that we're going to deal with this. We have key events that we're going to deal with this. Chair, then we get to the slide 22. Without money, we can't do anything. And it really shows that we're projecting a shortfall of 83 million in 2017-2018. But, Chair, we believe we're going to manage this. It will mean that we begin to tighten our belt. But it's good to start from a very enviable situation when you then grow. This chairperson has brought about the taking over of the E-natives. Recall, we have not been paying for staff all these years and the running of the system. So taking over that system brings about this matter. But we have taken this matter with the shareholders and is going to be serving again on the shareholder committee. But we believe that it's not a crisis. It's managed, as we are saying, the word projected. It doesn't say that we are in the red, chairperson. Chairperson, I need to thank you. And we close with this quotation because we believe it's applicable in our situation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Indeed, you can't change the direction of the wind. It's a given. If it's northeasterly, it becomes that. If it's northwesterly, it becomes that. Honourable members, thank you very much, Advocate Msimi and your team. Are there additions from the board members?
Yeah, I think everything has been covered in the presentation by the CEO.
Okay, thank you very much. Honourable members, there you go. Take it, Honourable Msinga, Honourable Sibande.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for the presentation. And since the last couple of engagements, always enthusiastic to hear what is the latest developments at RTMC, and I'm really encouraged by what I'm hearing in general, especially around issues which we've raised last time, and I'm sure you are as equally as concerned about this since you've alluded to some progress in terms of development and interventions around the issues around learner license issuing and the corruption and bad practices that we've seen there. But in a general term, I understand that you need to engage now in a form of an intervention. What precautionary measures would one then, in terms of redesigning the system, in an effort to make sure that you would instill a new culture in one sort, or would you maintain a policing strategy? Because it's a whole different scenario if you police than where you would just police, you know, normal activity, criminal activity or fraudulent activity. So, because it boils down to credibility at the end of the day, which is very important. So, therefore, my reference to measures to instill a different culture, rather than to just have an enforcement activity to make sure that these things don't happen. Then my second question is around the quality of traffic officers. I'm also encouraged by the fact that you say that by 2020 we would have traffic officers with an NQF level 6, 3 years training. I'm sure that definitely is the right direction that we're going. And of what volumes are we talking of? Because surely that would have huge budget implications. And then obviously, because this would encourage all the efforts around road safety, a certain priority needs to be drawn up in terms of the volume of money allocated towards training and to retrain, because it's surely not the intention to start with the new applicants but also to retrain. So what is that budget schedule, what would that look like? And would you suggest that additional funding should be allocated towards the restructuring to a large extent that we're doing and talking about here, rather than to just expand on current services around training? The K53 is also something that you might recall I mentioned last time too, because we all agree that the K53 is outdated to a large extent. However, if I look at the K53 and the whole intention, especially with the objective of a defensive approach towards learning how to drive, there's nothing wrong with that. So where did it go wrong? Because surely that type of instilling a type of road behavior in terms of a defensive approach is a good one. So where did it go wrong? And to what extent would the revitalized, if you would like to call it that, revitalized K53 or K54, if we go along with the numbers, I never knew where the 53 came from. But, you know, is it then a new K53? Are we getting rid of the old defensive philosophy, defensive approach around learning people how to drive? What's the idea around the fact that we at this stage now admit that the K53 is not successful in bringing about the type of road behavior that we would want? Lastly, Chair, I'm also encouraged with any form of parallel measurement and evaluation in any implementation of a particular policy or plan. It's always good practice. Also within the review committee around road safety and the launch of the road safety program. What is the reporting line and reporting structure of that, and what would the typical result look like of this review committee, and what scientific basis or research sort of basis would we have? Because most importantly, that is a very good step in the right direction to then get a better understanding and then also to identify hotspots of where we should then focus on. Thank you, Chair, in absence.
Morning, Patrick.
Chairperson or acting chair, what hand do I today? It's a special Friday, so I'll be mild. Yes. First of all, I would like to welcome the presentation and also welcome the call we made several times that we are sick and tired of COBO, Congress of Boys Only. At least US, this is for the first time they listen to us, that we need to take women serious. It means that we are taking them seriously. So, and to me, I'm happy to say that even in the board, to be board members, of which it's very rare in some committees, they stick on COBO, Congress of Boys Only. But nevertheless, let me come up with my question. May you please help us then? You see, number one, may you please give us a clarity on Inetis transfer? And also, give us whether Tasima is still an obstacle. And also, may you please clarify us or take us on board. You know, I was impressed on slide number 5 when you talk about your impact on some of the key strategic areas. You see, to all people who came in and present, my worry is that one which you put in bracket about the issue of unlocking the potential of SMEs and co-ops and township and rural enterprises. You see, I'm still insisting that sometimes some of the people are giving us a paperwork, but practically they are not there. Therefore, may you please take us on board. Are you there in the provinces? Because the people, when you talk about the rural enterprises and other like, they tell us about, every time they report about cities and metros, they don't go where the people are. And also, may you please help us. See, I don't know how I can link with it, but I can link with slide number 4, and also there was somewhere where you spoke about this issue of mushrooming of driving schools. And you spoke about youth development. My worry is one, it is alleged that in some provinces they've already started some program to target students at school. Therefore, what is your mechanism, strategy to make sure that there is a proper monitoring in that regard? Because I know very well that it can have a negative impact in terms of our drivers. And then also, may you please assist us. You see, what kills a lot of people is this. Is your system able to speak to each other? Because some of the people, their job which they are doing is not coordinated. Most of the time, the only thing which they are talking about is the meeting of the board meeting with the agency and the staff, that's all. But in the reality, effect, with your own responsibility, is it able to talk to each other? And I don't want to go with a lot of things. You spoke about the K53. May you please take us on board with clarity to exactly what is the substitute of K53? You replace it with what? I don't want to give a lot of, because today is Friday, as I indicated. Yesterday it was Sheila's day.
Thank you, Acting Chair. Apologies for coming in late. My apologies for missing the presentation, but I had gone through it, so I'm presuming it's the same as what was emailed to us and what we have in front of us. So based on that, I just have a few questions. The first is road safety strategy. If you could just talk to us about on what research is it based and how is it mapped out? And also it refers in the document here, page 13, talks about a road safety strategy. Would it be possible to actually get to actually get that strategy for the committee to get a copy of that strategy? And then just on page 19, as we'll just get to it, talks here about a KPI, talking about a 4% increase in revenue. If you could just talk to us about that, from where would you get this revenue? And then on your page 20, I'm very glad to see that you're talking about finalization of a 24/7 shift system. I'm presuming it's the one that exists already in the Western Cape. And if that's the case, whereabouts are we with that? At what stage would we have the other provinces in a situation where there'd be 24-hour, 7 days a week shift system? On that same page, you talk about a national accreditation of crash statistics. If you could just talk to us about, there used to be a facility where there was statistics kept and monitored and updated on a constant basis. If you could tell us, do you have that facility, because you didn't have it until a while back? And then what do you mean by this national accreditation of crash statistics? You could just talk to us about that. That's all, Chief. Thank you very much.
Let me ask just two small questions. The one question is in relation to, we know that the AG is concerned the last time around, which resulted into the qualification, but the issue was more of the issue. But my question is generally in terms of whether the institutional arrangement, your own capacity, is up to the task of taking over the functions as now incorporated with the TASNIMA, to make sure that the particularly around the AG's concerns, that is taken care of. Number two is just really the is an addition to the question that has been asked around the whole integration of traffic officers in respect to hours and uniformity. That whole discussion about uniformity. Where are we with that? What's your time frame in terms of scheduling to complete, so that at least there is a visibility on the road 24/7? So the uniformity part and the visibility. Your staff complement, as it stands currently, with the everything included, including the tax going forward, the plan to, what is the plan in terms of that? Now, this question is probably maybe outside of your presentation. There's been lots of discussion around this whole thing called accident bureau. The accident bureau that really kept data, development of the data in terms of the conditions of roads where the accident is a frequent accident because of the engineering part of road. I mean, if I look at Cape Town, I can tell you more or less where there will be a frequent accident. Sometimes the condition of the weather contribute to that. But you would say it's a driver, but that's that 5%. Of the problem that is related to the engineering and road. That discussion, is it receiving some attention in your management or in your strategy going forward? Because I think that also would help everybody to plan better and behavior. because then awareness is given to motorists about, I mean, if you drive to Beaufort West, then everybody knows that there is a stretch of road that is a problematic. That's 200 kilometers stretch of road that you drive between Lensbeck and Beaufort West. It's a lonely road, but with the road engineering side, they have been able to put something on the road so that on a continuous basis, you get reminded as a driver, you suddenly hear the corrugated sound of the road, then you wake up even if you are tired because you then think that you're already out of the road. So that's the kind of thing I'm asking you. Thank you very much. You go ahead and questions and answer questions.
Chair, thank you, Chair. We're going to share the questions. Those that I will not deal with, I will leave it to the colleagues and the members of the board. And allow me, Chair, to answer only the easy ones so that they deal with the difficult ones. I'll start from the bottom. Chair, the issue that relates to the road infrastructure, it squarely lies in the hand of Sanlam. But what we have as ACTMC, we then deal with the road monitoring system, which is a system that we then do an analysis of the road, recommend to Sanlam where interventions are supposed to be dealt with. So this model, it's an international standard model. It's called the SARA. The vehicle is fitted with all this equipment. We learned from the process was from Sweden. The vehicle will move on the road. It determines what is wrong with the road infrastructure. So the engineering there too, and engineers will then begin to make a recommendation. We will want to cover the 752 kilometers of the entire country, but in terms of the capacity, we're unable to do that within a short space of time. We therefore prioritize what we call the roads that are prone to accidents, which we call hazardous roads. We have prioritized those first so as to give validation in terms of the road infrastructure network and where we need to do corrections, like the Moloto Road. We dealt with it and gave it back to Sanlam. Hence, we see these improvements that are happening to deal with those roads. So if we can have a capacity that and spread our wings throughout all provinces, because that vehicle that is fitted with that equipment, we only have one. We would love to have nine that will then deal with each and every province. The vehicle is dedicated and the team dedicated to the province, but we get in there, Chair. The issue of the 24/7, the shift system, and I think the question links to the question asked by Honorable Mr. De Freitas. Even in the Western Cape, we have not entirely and then in its entirety achieved the 24/7. It's a shift system, but it doesn't work around the clock, and that's what we're talking about when we therefore say let's go back to the bargaining chamber. The Public Service Act has made provision. HOD should have dealt with this issue from the amendment stage in 2003, but they have shied away dealing with this matter. But what we have done, what we have now ensured, we wanted an integrated fashion. Hence, we wrote the Department of Public Service and Administration together with SALGA and the provinces to agree at the National Bargaining Chamber of a two-shift system. We align ourselves to the police. Police work 6 to 6 and 4 days in, 4 days out. That's the process that we're going through. But as an interim measure, we followed the Western Cape model. Mpumalanga is the next to then come because we are at an advanced stage, having consulted at the bargaining chamber. Mpumalanga will be implementing. We're looking that Mpumalanga by September will begin to implement the model as the Western Cape, followed by the Free State, and the others will be coming before the end of the financial year. But that's an interim. Therefore, the holistic approach that we're talking about, we're looking that in the next financial year, which is 2018-2019 we should have closed the chapter, and having changed the working condition of all traffic law enforcers. But what we do, Chair, as a carrot and a stick, those that are now employed from this year, we made a condition to the provinces that as you employ, the new employees are on the 24/7, so that we begin to implement this without any hassles. Determine the conditions before you appoint people so as to ensure that as they are appointed, they're coming on board. Because in this chair, there's an issue that is very subtle that you're not dealing with. At the center is the overtime. Because what traffic officers do, they therefore budget on the overtime. Saturday and Sunday is called the overtime. If you look at the salary, the minimum amount paid on overtime per traffic officer per month, it's 8,000 minimum. The maximum it's 22,000. So this amount we have calculated it. It will have allowed the South African country to could have employed 2,340 additional traffic officers if we did not use the overtime. So we are now beginning to take something away. So this will then necessitate that let's review the employment conditions of the traffic officers. We know that there was a dispensation made for social workers, for doctors, and all other issues. Is it not that we should deal with that so that we close this chapter once and for all? So those are the deliberations on the table. Staff complement, we are just a drop in the ocean. We're sitting with 653 inclusive of the recent integration, Chair. You will recall that from the 1st of April, we have also taken over the cross-border inspectorate, which is the law enforcement arm of the cross-border, which has joined the RTMC as well as the training colleges. So ideally, Chair, to assist the process, our view is that you need not have the national traffic officers stationed in Pretoria. They must be at provinces. So the recruitments that you are now making will be deployed at the provinces with this qualification. We might keep a smaller team for intervention purposes, but every traffic officer must be at the place where work is done, not as an intervention. The Tasima matter. Chair, having taken off Tasima, we have the necessary skill. In fact, to give comfort to the committee, the designers and the developers of the systems are all at RTMC. They were with Tasima. We employed them from 2015 May. We have also added capacity, additional capacity, because when you deal with the system, you will also want new inventions. So we acquired additional 20, those that were with initially the banks as well as the IT space and engineering to ensure that we are capacitated. So with that, we are quite comfortable with that capacity. I think that question links to question number 3, which I will take, that then says that let's assist the committee on the whether Tasima is still an obstacle. I want to separate Tasima and Inatis. We don't have obstacles in the Inatis, the Electrical National Traffic Information System. We don't. We do have challenges with a service provider, which is Tasima. Having taken over, they've been taking us to court. We have one judge, Judge Tuchten, has called and find a way of saying we are habitual litigants, because we're every month in court. There's no judge in North Gauteng High Court who has not dealt with the matter of Tasima. So when they lose, they appeal. When the appeal is dismissed, they petition. For instance, when the the handover application and the eviction application was granted in our favor, they appealed. And just often dismissed their application. We knew, Chair, that they were going to petition the Supreme Court of Appeal. So we make use of the 2 hours because the law says the order will not be suspended until the application is lost. Now, we knew that Pretoria and Gauteng, even if papers can go fast, it's not going to take them anything less than an hour or two. So we ensured that on the day of the matter, when the matter was heard, we had the sheriff and had everybody on site to evict them because the order is not suspended by that time. By the time when they were taken out of the premises, they then lodged with the stamp of the Supreme Court in Bloemfontein was then attached and they allocated the case number. That's what now they are saying, they are challenging us. They have now petitioned the Supreme Court to say, during that time, we should have stayed and not evicted them because they have made their intention known. So we are now in the Supreme Court on that appeal that courts must retain back the system to them until they have exhausted their remedy. So they're going to keep us busy. On the other side, they have now taken us to the Labour Court on Section 197 that we must therefore take over the entire staff. We staff, mostly they employed in 2016 when the order had been very clear. They employed staff, gave them very high salaries, double the salary that government can afford, and were in court with them. But it's very interesting that the very same matter is the subject of the Supreme Court. Today, as we are sitting here, some colleagues are at the Labour Court attending to that matter together with our lawyers. So they are keeping us busy. So the innates, no challenge. Tasima, yes, and we foresee that we'll be in court for the next 3 years. And naturally, that's how they are going to, they're making their money from there, from those people. But Chair, this matter of Tasima is far from being over. Recall, there's a lake. The court had declared the contract to be invalid from 2016. So anything and everything that the government had paid, we want to retrieve from them because it was irregularly and unlawfully paid on them. So they are ensuring that by the time we come to that stage, there will be no funds available. It will just be an empty shell. That's the strategy that they're playing. What the issue of the unlocking of the SMMEs, in particularly in the township and the rural, were very clear on the slide. We have a budget that is very minimal, but within the existing budget, we have ensured that the budget spreads its wings and finds expression in even at the far remote. That we have done in terms of classifying the services. We have the services, particularly because we are road safety related, we're dealing with the promotion of the promotional materials that are dealt with and promotion of road safety. So we have ensured that all the service providers that we have are located in various areas and we give that funding to those people and secure the services from them. There are only 2 levels that we were doing very badly. It is the issue of the military veterans as well as the issue of the disability. Disabled, we only had 2 service issues. But having taken over the e-natives, we then ensured that all provinces, we have what you call SMMEs, those that are dealing with the e-native systems at the DATCs, we've taken to the local. Nobody will leave Pretoria to go and deal with a service provider, service in DR. So we're also targeting students that have dealt with the IT to be in the panel to render those services so that the economy finds expression and spread in the locality where we are. The issue of the driver learners system, particularly partnering with the Department of Education. We had given Chair each and every province 40 million in the year to 2015. Part of the issue was to ensure that they promote the road safety, in particular to have projects that are linked to the acquisition of the driver's licenses. So what then came to the fore, provinces will partner with driving schools, but will determine the number that no province will give us less than 300 students who have been taken from the embryonic stage until the final conclusion. But the condition was, let it be done in the rural areas, because those are the children that are most disadvantaged, in particular when they complete their schooling. K53, it's a two questions in it. What we're saying, we have done now the research, and hence we're now saying we're now developing a curriculum in relation to the content of the K53, because we have identified shortcomings within the K53. For instance, we want to spend time on this one. The current situation, for you to acquire a learner's license, you must deal with the road sign rules, road signs, control, and also the five will then be given on understanding. We're saying it doesn't assist us, because when you then get to the road, you are exposed to the reality as opposed to the road signs. And if you look at the K53, those books, you can know them by heart. If you are given book S or R or T, you already know the answers, what the answers are. And we are saying it's not a good system. It doesn't prick the psychological applicability of the individual. So we need you to be tested through a process of environment, the issue of the road safety in itself, the understanding of the driving. But what we're dealing with, we want to emphasize the issue that relates to the human conduct, because the analysis of the accidents that we have pose to the fact that 60% of our fatal crashes are consequent to the human conduct. What is the human conduct? The attitude, speeding, as also the issue of other than the road infrastructure and the road conduct. So that's what we are beginning to change on the K53. Whether it's still going to be K53, or K52, whatever, but what we are concerned with is the context of this process. Let me, because I'm taking the questions from the back, the last one, the issue is the issue of the 4% increase in terms of the funding. Where is this for? Where do we find this funding? One of the key issues of the funding becomes a transactional fees. This is the issue that arises from the licensing of vehicles, motor vehicles, and acquisition of driver's licenses. But also, fundamentally, it's how we invest the money that we have in the department to ensure that we get the maximum value. For instance, from last year, we have been investing with the Reserve Bank. We get the maximum investment out of what we are doing. So we are running the process as RTMC, like your treasurer will then deal with on the cash basis, on daily basis, that we require the amount from the bank as when we are going to pay. So we have made it our process that we're paying once a week. So the entire amount is with the bank, is generating, with the Reserve Bank, is generating the income. We only require the amount that we are just going to be paying during that week. So we have seen some returns on investment on that process. Do we need an additional funding? I was told by my father never to say no. But is it an issue of not saying no? No, definitely there's a need for additional funding. Let's begin to unpack the additional funding. The issue of the NQF level 6 will warrant the retraining of the current law enforcement over a period. We call that upscaling as opposed to the NQF level 6. We need to upskill all the law enforcers throughout the country. We need the funding to ensure that we take them to that particular level. But also the alignment. We'll recall that we say from the 1st of April we have taken over the CBRTA Traffic Law Inspectorate. They were only concerned with the issue of that relates to CBRTA, cross-border operations. We're now going to multi-skill them so that they become an integrated fashion to deal with this matter of the traffic law enforcement and train them on the traffic law enforcement. But again, we've also, on this issue of the upskilling, there is an issue that is constantly growing in South Africa where the metros see themselves as metro police as opposed to the traffic law enforcers. We have now agreed with SAPS that we are now going to have deal with the curriculum. You know that the traffic officers, before they become the metro police, they will then undergo a 6-month training with SAPS to deal with the issue of the crime prevention. We have now sealed the deal that each and every traffic officer that we're going to be training, in particular the NQF level 6, they will also be trained on the crime and prevention, on the process that SAPS has done, so that there's a seamless situation in the law enforcement, that you don't then say, I'm a traffic officer or my traffic law enforcement will also be dealing with the crime prevention across the board. Also, the funding, the implementation of the road safety strategy is going to require a lot of funding. What has not happened, even in the curriculum of our traffic law enforcers, the traffic qualification and training never emphasized the road safety element. So the current curriculum also takes 30% of the curriculum being road safety, because traffic officers are first people on the road that also deal with the road safety. So this curriculum has taken all the facets into the fore. The issue of the Traffic Law Enforcement Review Committee. This committee comprises of experts. We have in the members of the committee 2 professors representing 2 universities, the TUT University as well as Monash University. You have experts on road safety. You have experts on traffic law enforcement. And I think from the traffic law enforcement, we have more about 3 there too that are part of these issues. We have people from the SAPS, we have people from intelligence, we also have people from the labor. What is this Traffic Law Review Committee intended to do? It's to ensure that it goes throughout the country and meet with all stakeholders to then begin to make inputs. One, what should be the, we call it a traffic code, national traffic code, or standing orders. What should be, we need to have uniform standing orders for the traffic fraternity throughout the country. What should, amongst others, what should be the uniform? What should be the, should we have one traffic law enforcement throughout the country, or the provinces should have the separate trafficking? Salaries that are pertinent to this traffic law enforcement, norms and standards governing the traffic law enforcement, as well as the recruitment thereto. So it's a broad issue that they are now going in terms of the chain. Once they are done with the process is going to go to the board. From the board, it goes to the shareholder. Because the shareholder, we are sitting with the 9 MECs from all the provinces, SALGA, as well as the national minister, so that we then begin to codify that process as the military has done and ensure that we have these separate norms and standard. Is there anything that I've left? Oh, the accident bureau, the crash data system. We had started with partnership with the CSA Act to deal with the crash data system. That is the way, the collation, the warehousing, and the warehousing of the crash. But we have gone further. We have also partnered with SAFSA, because we are then saying the crash data in South Africa has never been validated. So we have, I think, about 60 of the employees, contract employees, that are currently trained by STATS SA in the analysis of the data and the data collation and the data packaging as parallel to the issue of the crash data that we are then developing together with CSIR. Chair, Suspin Dwaraka.
Thanks. Again, I just want to add to that one of the dates of the data in relation to the crash. The RTMC, we have developed the in-house road traffic information data bank, where the purpose of the system is to collect data from various departments that deal with crashes, like Department of Health, RAF, and Department of Home Affairs. We have currently signed a memorandum of understanding with RAF and Department of Home Affairs. So the system started last year, commenced last year in June, and we have completed the phase two of the system, which is run in-house in the RTMC. And it will be completed now in May. The hold up was the transfer of the INETs because they wanted to link the system so that they can talk to each other. Because the purpose of us for developing that RTID is because we have seen that the collection of data was integrated in all departments. So we wanted to have one crash data information system so that we can know, because you know when there is a fatal crash, all departments are involved, Department of Home Affairs, SAPS. So now RTMC will be able to get the data in one control system.
Just to buttress that point, why the Home Affairs? We're moving to a point when everybody in this country, before you can be buried, you need to have a death certificate. We are working with Home Affairs so that those that die or those that succumbed to the road accidents, there should be a specific classification in the death certificate so that the data that is run by Home Affairs can give us the validation in relation to what the pathological services are giving us and what we collect from SAPS and what we have. We want to validate the entire value chain. That's what we are currently dealing with and developing. Is there anything to this?
There was a question on the National Road Safety Strategy to find out what was the basis on terms of the research. And we just wanted to highlight that the strategy was approved on the 29th of April, of March, and we will make the copy available. And the process of the development of the strategy looked at first the analysis of the data that we have available to us. So we looked at the secondary data that we have. But we further also looked at some of the research work. Some of the research work is either done internally by the RTMC, but also the institutions of higher learning who do some road safety research in their day-to-day work to assist us in coming up with a way of developing a strategy that is more responsive. And we also looked at benchmarking. So we looked at other countries. After we've well determined what are the key challenges in the South African perspective, we then looked at other countries to see how they've been able to deal with the road safety and to reduce their fatalities. And through that, that's when we came up with different interventions that will assist in the implementation of the strategy. And one thing that was done with this new strategy is that the interventions were classified within short-term, medium-term, and long-term, because there is a full understanding that you cannot do everything all at once. You need to take a phase-out approach, noting that there'll be funding required. And you will see that when we table the strategy, we said in the short term, we will utilize budget that we already have. And we will look at prioritization between ourselves and the spheres of government as well as the Department of Transport so that we can implement certain measures so we don't have to look for outside funding. But as you start progressively moving into the long term, particularly issues around infrastructure, which become high investment technologically, and they actually need more money, there's also a proposal sitting within the strategy to say we need to look at a way of introducing central funding, but bringing in private sector as well, because because one of the things that we are sitting with in the country is public sector has funding, but private sector is also putting some funding into road safety. But we've never been able to sit in one room and agree on very key programs that we should implement and then be in a position to then determine their impact. Then that will assist in making sure that the country has longevity and is able to implement those long-term interventions that needs more funding. So that is how the strategy is actually outlined. But further to that, we are in the process of ensuring that the implementation there to the alignment of programs across the spheres of government. So particularly influencing the planning cycle, where we make sure that those interventions are within their own start plan processes as well as their annual performance planning, so that the strategy remains funded. Because once the interventions are not funded, it means they will not get implemented and will not obviously be able to measure whether the strategy was successful. I think the other one that we needed to take was around the youth. The issue to say at universities, the youth is being targeted, obviously, to get them to take learner license, NSN driving license, because they know that they will be going into the work. And part of the process of the review of development of the curriculum for driving school and the regulation of driving school is also to address some of these challenges. But at the moment, we also have programs that particularly focus at institutions of higher learning, so we can start creating that consciousness around issues of road safety. Because we are saying that there's a huge gap, that at certain grades there is a basic understanding of how you cross the road, but then when you get into high school there's nothing around road safety, and then people move into tertiary. So we might not be successful implementing formal training, but through our programs of education of road safety, we then be able to access those people to create that consciousness and to make sure that they understand that road safety is not necessarily about you getting the driver's license. It's that you need to become a responsible person on the road, because there are other road users. So that's how currently we are dealing with it. But there is that long-term view to say we need to legislate the driving schools and create a curriculum that will govern that whole process of how a person actually acquires that driving license and at the end of the day gets the renewal there too as well.
Yeah, we believe we have canvassed all the questions, unless there is one that we have missed.
Okay. Colleague, is there a further question?
No question, just a comment.
Comment.
Okay. Chairperson, I wanted maybe to, on slide number 5, I think that there is a small error in terms of referring to veterans MKVA. It's MKMVA. Because I'm scared with that smaller mistake, because in future it would lead that some people, instead of becoming organization, they became court lords. Thank you.
Thanks. Greetings, CEO. sorry to arrive late. So I just want to have some few questions. I read the slide, but I wanted to know about the issue of single law, traffic law enforcement, the whole country, as the main idea of introducing the RTMC in 1998. Under Minister Maharaj was to amalgamate all traffic force to be one. How far? Okay. The other question is about the fight against drunk driving. Do you think you are winning with the fight of drunk driving when you don't have 24/7? Because most of the traffic officers knock off 22 at 10 o'clock. But people, they continue drinking until, and go to the roads and find there is nobody there. So, another thing, which, don't you think that the National Road Traffic Act must be amended in terms of the issue of drunk driving? Because now, the strategy, national strategy for Arrive Alive, is said, don't drink and drive. But the act itself
allows you to drink, but not exceeding the certain percent. So I think there is a contradiction there. So in some countries like in Dubai, where there is a very low accident rate, they don't allow anybody to be on the road, whether you're a pedestrian or you're driving, having an alcohol in your blood. So this is also because we're failing, because the issue of drug and driving, you arrest a person, you find sometimes a queue in the surgery to blood sample, the person is found discharged at the court. So they will continue to drink again. But once if they said they found alcohol, regardless of the percent in their blood, they are arrested, it will assist to remove these drunken people on our roads. The other issue is about this arranged speed law enforcement. I saw it on the N1 road in the Western Cape site, where I think they have some system where your speed is controlled, because of the when you first enter to another town and you are driving and you enter to another town, then they calculate and they find you that you were driving fast. So it's only on the N1 road, Western Cape side, and N3 road from Free State to Durban. So don't you think that you must have an influence to make to all these national dangerous roads, so that it's easy for the drivers now to behave, because there everything is computerized, there's nothing bribed, nothing. Because when they stop you, they'll tell you that from this particular point to this point, you were driving at the average of this much. Then they issued you a summons. What is the plan of the corporation to spread that kind of law enforcement? The mobile weigh bridge, I saw it now, this festive season, is quite a good innovation. So I think if possible, it must be arranged to be as many as possible. Because some of the people now, they dodge the road where there is a permanent two-way bridge. They use the alternative road. But with that intelligence, we can able to cap the overload. Lastly, it's about it's the same like the single force. Same uniform. This South Africa is controlled by about 5 kind of traffic uniforms. So it confused even the tourist. He's driving Eastern Cape, he found the traffic officer in blue. Driving to Limpopo, traffic officer in khakis. Driving in town, there are metros, khaki in blue. Driving in the national road, find the RTMC officers, like our police, or you see, the cross-border officers. So it's quite confusing in one country. We're not a federal state here. So we need single uniform, if possible.
Round up.
No, thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. I thought that was the last question.
Yeah, that was the last question, but I'm just trying to expunge the first question. We've already dealt with that uniformity issue. So he arrived at late, you will read the minutes. You can then deal with other questions.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, allow me to express and have a disclaimer. The Honourable Lauds and myself never cook us to have red ties. But the point is and we welcome the comments in terms of the way bridges, the system that has come about. It's both way bridges and roadworthy testing. We do the testing on the road, particularly for the on-road vehicles. But each and every province was provided with two-way bridges, except for Limpopo provided additional 3, and Northwest. So in the country, we only have Limpopo, Northwest, and Gauteng. Gauteng has 8 with the way bridges. But it will be ideal that we have these mobile testing stations and way bridges, because it deals with those that get their roadworthy certificates fraudulently in the issues. The other issue, the single traffic police and all this, as the chair has said, the traffic law enforcement traffic review committee is dealing with them. It will come with the norms and standards, the uniforms, the vehicles, and their coding and the branding will be coming. The issue of the average speed management, which is done particularly at the Western Cape, KZN, and Free State. There's also another issue into it. It's an intervention, yes, but at the center of it is also the issue of the back office. Because as you do the law enforcement, the back office becomes very critical. This process also wants to ensure that we begin to nationalize the issue of the back offices throughout the country. The drunk and driving, it's we're winning, but there's an element that we're working with the Department of Justice that will ensure that we win drastically. The amendment of the Criminal Procedure Act to rescheduling of Schedule 2 and 3 to Schedule 5, and the minimum sentence that should be attached to issue of the road traffic offenses. Once that battle can be won, where the Criminal Procedure Act can be amended and the courts can have a mandatory minimum sentence, as in other countries, that's what is going to assist us in this process. But I think the rest we have dealt with that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Advocate. CEO, Chair, you may take over now. Chair, I think that brings us to the end of the presentation. It leaves me just with the words of thanks that CEO and the team and the entourage that keep up the good job that you're doing. We know the battle to change your mindset. It's not overnight. It will take some time. It will take some issue of carrots and the stick issue. That will have to happen, but keep on doing it. It's important. But Tasima is, I think, the less we hear about Tasima, the better for us. So we have just been running with the temperature and the high blood pressure on that issue. I think you should close the issues more and continue working. They can fight from outside, but you run the operation. That's it. Thank you very much and have a nice weekend. We're still working.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, we'll cordially invite the committee when the committee has time to come and visit the INETI Center, not the Tasima Center, so that the committee can have an appreciation of the entire country system. It might be very good to visit that part. But we undertake, Chairperson, to circulate a copy of the road safety strategy as approved by the board. We'll ensure that the Secretariat receives those copies by next week for the committee. We want to dearly thank the committee, and we appreciate the wisdom that we always gather having come from this committee. We thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much.
Honourable members, while they are leaving, I try to take it out.
I'm just going to go. These are issues.
It's not opening here. I don't know what they have. I think you could
let me indicate to you that
we've got a slide. Oh, there we go. Anyway, they're going to buy us lunch because they're late.
I know exactly. I know all of that.
How's it?
Yeah, as I say, can you open the WhatsApp, please?
Okay, you're leaving.
Just with the names and phone numbers, I'll
make a presentation and then take the
yes.
Right, okay. Thank you very much, honourable members. Artia is here, but I wanted to indicate whilst they will be making a presentation that you will digest this, and at the end of the meeting we can quickly just deal with it. We've received an invitation from the Minister of Transport inviting us to the launch of the train by the President. The launch of the new trains will be in Pretoria on Tuesday the 9th of May, 9 o'clock in Pretoria Station. So this is an invitation that came to the Portfolio Committee. The launch of the new trains will happen in Pretoria on the 9th of May at 9 o'clock. So I was just indicating that whilst we will be engaging, just think through, at the end of the meeting we'll be able to say what do we do with this matter. I can see there's hands and issues and issues. We will, I'll tell, Valerie will send you the invitation. No, but I said after we've interacted with, no, don't have your, relax. That's what I'm saying, Honorable De Freitas. Just relax. Yeah, I can see people are starting to relax. No diaphragm up in this essence. Welcome to the team. I am Tia. I don't know who's the leader of the delegation. CFO, is that you? Okay. You're welcome with your team. You are 10 minutes behind schedule, so we are going to take that 10 minutes away from your time. We have given the ones that came before you 20 minutes for the presentation, and then we had 30 minutes for discussions. So we'll just take 5 minutes and we give you 15 minutes for presentation. And I think we have had several engagements with Artia, and therefore we would request you to highlight the critical things that you believe we should be able to focus on as you are dealing with your APP, as you are dealing with your strategic plan. You are one of the portfolios that the AGSA has indicated that there are the port is starting to boil in the wrong direction, but we believe that we can be able to really arrest and harvest whatever is wrong, throw it away, and then remain with the good harvest as we're going forward. Once more, you're welcome, and I'm just not going to take your 15 minutes. By 10 to 11, we should have finished so that we are able to move forward with the questions. And by 20 past 11, honorable members would have made a done deal in terms of questions and answers. And let me request honorable members that preambles and prayers should be advocate. We don't need prayers here. We are not in court. We are in the Portfolio Committee. Right on, my dear sister.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, and good morning, Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee. I will jump right into it. My name is Palesa Mwalisi. I am the CFO of RTIA. I'd like to just register Mr. Chua's apology. He is off ill. He's been booked off by the doctor. and so he's unable to join us today. I'm joined by Advocate Billy Gwana, the RTIA's company secretary, and Mr. Jacob Megwa, also the RTIA head of strategy. So good morning to you all. Good morning also to our colleagues from the Department of Transport. I will jump right into the presentation now by being mindful of the time. Do you have it in front of you, or is it going to be presented? Oh, okay, so I'll just tell you as I turn the page. So I won't go too much into the index. I think we're going to go into all of it in a bit of detail anyway. But the index just outlines what we'll be discussing roughly. Right, so the presentation will touch on some of our alignment to the NDP, MTSF, and SONA in terms of what our key focus is at RTIA in terms of our mandate and also in terms of our plan strategy for the upcoming period. So the alignment to the National Development Plan, we've got the approach to prosperity and equity, which can be achieved to fight corruption, to provide job creation, build a capable and developmental state, and the overall impact on service delivery. And where RTIA fits into that, our job in the adjudications for infringements is to actually look at curbing corruption and to provide sound governance and fraud management in the law enforcement space. The employment of youth, women, and people with disabilities through contingent and permanent employment and skills development is part of our key focus areas through our enterprise development plan, and also through the general employment of people or staff at RTIA. Public access and provision to redress, one of our main objectives through our mandate is to make the law enforcement environment more accessible to people so that people are able to engage with law enforcement, query their fines, deal with the infringements, adjudications, payments, all of that, making it much more easy and convenient for the public. And also our commitment to service delivery through our committed staff, the way we are constituted, and our proactive thinking and driven to succeed in achieving the mandate of RTIA, which also seeks to curb the death toll on our roads. Further to that, in terms of our alignment to the MDP, is providing job creation through our enterprise development program, which I did touch on briefly. We're looking at improving on our customer touch points, out of mobile offices, walk-in centers, digital touch points through our enterprise development program. And that will also provide jobs as we provide or as we look at increasing enterprises and small businesses that will assist us in executing our mandate. Our alignment to the MTSF, key initiatives in this period are the ARDA national rollout, which has been pending for some time now, the demerit points implementation, which is linked to the national rollout, the rollout of the enterprise development program, which will increase our footprint across the country, and implementation of the driver rehabilitation program, which will be undertaken after the promulgation of the ARDA amendment bill. All of these are linked to the national rollout. Our alignment to the SONA is to provide for job creation through support for small, medium, and micro enterprises. Again, touching on that enterprise development program, we're looking at increasing the number of SMMEs that are functioning in our country and therefore increasing jobs available for people. Our key priority is to partner with women, youth, and those that are disabled to provide extended services of RTIA across the country, such as educational empowerment programs through the agency's various platforms, including those walk-in centers and inspections in loco. The AG's recommendations and findings for 2015-16, this is just a few slides on how we have responded to those recommendations and findings from our 2015-16 audit. Pardon me, I'm on page 7. I know I've forgotten to remind you what page I'm on. So one of the audit findings we had, or rather on this slide, we'll speak to the audit findings around reliability of performance information, irregular expenditure, procurement challenges, and supply chain mechanisms. In terms of reliability of performance information, we have intervened there through working on our our crafting of strategic objectives and how we do that. So we're looking at making our strategic objectives much smarter, more time-bound, more specific, more reliable, and easier to understand and identify. So we've worked on that in the 2017-18 strategic objectives that we prepared for you, which I will touch on as we go through our presentation. In terms of irregular expenditure, we've updated our policies and operational procedures to identify areas of possible irregular expenditure before it happens so that we can avoid it. We do ongoing and close monitoring of our supplier contracts to ensure that the scope doesn't increase, and also strengthening our internal control procedures. So we've done additional work and we keep improving in these areas as we identify areas or problems that may come up. We then work on them to make sure that we curb possible irregular expenditure. Some procurement challenges in terms of the underperformance of our procurement plan. We've looked into strategic contracts or transversal contracts as a strategic on a strategic level so that we can avoid the underperformance on our procurement plan, and ongoing management training so that people understand what their roles and responsibilities are when they do the bidding process. It's not just confined to one or two people in supply chain. It's actually a whole set of management that are responsible for the bid specifications, the bid evaluation, and the bid adjudication. So we do the continuous training on that of our management staff so that they understand what they're supposed to be doing when we do our bidding processes. And also we've updated our policies in line with the AG's recommendations, and we keep doing that as and when so that we have robust policies that deal with the Treasury prescripts around supply chain management. And on the following page, on page 8, movable and immovable assets, we had a few findings there around the completeness of our asset register, our fixed asset register, as well as the barcoding on our fixed asset register. So we just aligned that. We didn't have assets missing or anything, but it was just a matter of trying to identify what was barcoded in the physical asset and what is sitting on our fixed asset register. So we do have two fixed asset counts that we do, where we update our fixed asset register twice a year, and so we just continue with that and make it more robust. The next slide, page 9, just outlines our oversight structures. So we've got internal audit, the board and audit and risk committee, and the auditor general, and all of these three are levels of oversight that we experience at RTIA in order to improve on our internal controls and on our administration. On page 10, I'll get into some of the recommendations from this portfolio committee. We received a report from the portfolio committee to look into specifically our inadequate reliability on performance information, which we have dealt with. We also sought the services of an external service provider just to help us refine our crafting of strategic objectives. And also the APP targets, which also did not adhere to SMART principles, so those two are linked. We've corrected that. We had a workshop on the 22nd to the 25th of November to thoroughly deal with our APP targets. We were also assisted by the department as well in order to make sure that what we're crafting in our APP targets says what it means and it means what it says, and also to tie that into the SMART principles. So that's how we've managed to deal with our performance information shortcomings. On page 11, we just wanted to outline that we do have a board. Our board was appointed on the 1st of December 2014, and their term ends now in this year, the 30th of November 2017. The registrar is the executive member, Mr. Jeff Chue. His contract will expire in 2021. It was recently renewed in 2016, which is why his contract is now going to expire in 2021. The board charter is in place. It's reviewed annually or as and when it's required. So at a minimum, or let's say it would be renewed annually, otherwise more times in the year if we come up with situations that would require the board charter to be reviewed. The charter is aligned to the RTIA and departmental strategies. The board signs a performance agreement with the minister each year. and that is based on the strategic plan and the APP targets, and it's monitored quarterly by the department. The board assessment was concluded, and a report is expected to be submitted by the 31st of May. It was an external assessment that was done, and so we expect that report to come through by the end of this month after its finalization from our external reviewer. RTIA's board and committees. This is just an outline of the board meetings that took place in the year. Most of them were compliance meetings. We did have some special meetings taking place relating to some of the legislative issues, the rollout plan for ARJO, and some important factors that arose during the year. I won't go into too much detail unless the committee requires it. In the Audit and Risk Committee, we also had quite a lot of compliance meetings. We had two special meetings and one workshop. The two special meetings were mainly to deal with items that arose around the procurement matters in terms of our procurement plan and the annual financial statements before the finalization of the financial statements with AG. And also, the workshop mainly dealt with just some issues that have come around the amendment bill, what has come up and how we can respond to those from an audit and risk perspective, or rather from a finance and risk perspective. HR and REMCO meetings, we had three scheduled meetings and the rest were special meetings. And technical committee meetings were all scheduled meetings that took place, and that mainly deals with the business of RTIA in terms of our mandate. We also had chairman's committee meetings. The reason those are all special meetings is because the chairman's committee was created in the 2016-17 financial year to deal with some salient matters that came up during the financial year. It's also a new committee that was created that puts together all the chairpersons to discuss the key issues of the different committees that meet. So it does look like they're all special meetings, but in actual fact, it's because the committee was new in the year, and so we hadn't developed a plan for that committee from the beginning of the financial year. Changes to the strategic plan. We did have some changes to the strategic plan, and then I'll speak to the actual strategic plan at the end of the presentation, the last few slides. In the 2015, the initial 2015-2020 strategic plan spoke of the enforcement or enforced compliance by penalizing the contravention of road traffic laws. The new strategic objective speaks of discourage contravention of road traffic laws. So it may sound like it's the same thing, but it's a simplification of what we originally had there. Remember at the beginning of the presentation, I spoke of us making it easier and more simple for everyone to understand and aligning to SMART principles. So those are the principal changes that we had made to the strategic objectives. The first, sort of the second, on page 17, the first three columns predominantly dealt with the national rollout of ARDO. And because we're not at the stage where we've got certainty over the rollout, because we still need the amendment bill to be passed, we decided to move away from setting targets that speak of things we don't have clear, concrete certainty of. And that's why we now simplified the last three columns. We simplified the strategic objectives to speak of the our timeframes in terms of adjudicating representations directly linked to our core mandate and our core business, and development of an alternative funding model. Later on in the presentation, you'll see that we speak of the inadequacy of our funding, so we do need to look at other mechanisms to fund RTIA so that it is financially sustainable. We also don't want to rely on infringements because that's not what we're trying to do. We're not trying to make money from infringements. We're trying to curb the infringements so that less people are dying on our roads. So we're looking at developing an alternative funding model so that we can be a more sustainable business and rely less on the fiscus. On the following page, we deal with our next strategic objective. The first three columns then spoke of change the behavior of road users, and we've changed that strategic objective to coordinate and facilitate readiness for national implementation of ARDO. Again, we're not talking about the actual implementation. We're talking about all the activities that need to take place in the run-up to implementation of ARTO. So there's a lot of research and a lot of work that we have to do around the readiness assessments, around dissemination of ARTO information to issuing authorities, and and the readiness I've spoken about. So those, we changed our strategic objectives to speak more to the current things that we're able to do that we have certainty over to make them more smart. So it's not moving away from what we wanted to do previously, it's just refining things so that it's easier to understand. And the stuff that we've removed from the strategic plan, so if you look at the first three columns, the things that we've removed there, we're tracking those in the operational plan. So we haven't forgotten about them. We haven't stopped dealing with them. We're just tracking them in the operational plan until such time that we're able to lift them to a strategic level. Then on the following page, the administration and resourcing of the agency was the old strategic objective. We've now changed that to influence the change in road user behavior and also effective administration and resourcing of the agency to deliver on its mandate. So we did have change in road user behavior before, but now we wanted to make it clearer to speak to the influence that we would have on the change in road user behavior and then administration of the agency. We are still a new organization, so administration of the agency is still a key strategic element that we need to look into in order to make sure that we grow the agency to an agency that is able to deliver on its mandate, to deal with service delivery, and also is adequately capacitated and resourced for the job and the mandate that is required. That's why we still have effective administration as a strategic objective. And then on the following page, then we just speak of what our key value drivers are. The first strategic goal is effective and efficient organizational management that deals with our internal focus. The second strategic goal is the voluntary compliance with road traffic laws that is then externally focused and is aligned to our mandate. And then the strategic objective, which I've mentioned earlier, is the first being the effective administration and resourcing of the agency to deliver on its mandate. The second strategic objective being discourage the contravention of road traffic laws. The third will be coordinate and facilitate readiness for national implementation of ARTO. And the fourth being influence change in road user behavior. Our key value drivers would be, for the first strategic goal, would be sound governance and oversight, teamwork and collaboration, role clarity and accountability, effective internal processes, systems, and controls, ICT enablement, which is key to our daily functioning, effective resourcing, sound human resources and management practices. As a growing agency, we need to focus on these things and make sure that we are putting the right people in the right places so that we've got the right tools to execute our mandate. Then for the second strategic goal, the key value drivers would be expeditious processing and finalization of infringements, the research on relevant topics to support teams, high-quality, consistent decisions, technology-enabled workflows, processes, and channels, expeditious processing and finalization of matters, and the appropriate stakeholder management strategy in place. And key to this is not just for RKIA, it's also for all the other entities in the transport environment, such as RTMC, such as the law enforcement agencies, the issuing authorities, and so on. We work very closely with them because we're part of the same value chain. So part of our key opportunity here is to ensure that we're supporting each other to make sure that the law enforcement space is robust and it's strengthened through the activities, not just of the RTIA, but also of the law enforcement agents. Our strategic objectives are spoken to, the four. That's just on page 21. It's just another slide that outlines what they are. On page 22, our key focus areas for the 2017-18 period would be proactive and sustained marketing, communication, and education empowerment campaigns. That is also directly linked to our core mandate. So there we've got Scholar Road Safety Empowerment projects through driver simulators. Specifically in Gauteng, this is something that we'll start in Gauteng and spread across country in terms of making sure that when people leave school, when they leave with a matric certificate, they are better educated on road safety matters and on how to drive, so that when they start learning how to drive, they're not picking up the bad habits of other people that they've seen driving, they already know what the core or the key rules are before they leave school. Rolling out the enterprise development programs, this is our job creation initiative. Increasing and diversifying the RTI's footprint through diversified outdoor customer touchpoint, outdoor mobile offices, walk-in centers, digital touchpoints. And this is part of increasing the service delivery and making our offering more convenient and more accessible to the rest of the public. And to the launch of the National Imperative for Road Safety. And this is included in the road safety strategy. Our annual targets for 2017-18, so I've spoken of the key strategic objectives, the four strategic objectives, so I'll go straight into the key performance indicators. So the first one is the approval of an ERP model. What we've realized is we use the eNATIS as our core system through the NCR module. But what we need is we need an enterprise resource model that is going to take the information that we receive from eNATIS and we're able to use it for sound decision making. Now, we don't necessarily at the RTI have a system that does that right now. And so we need to develop a system that is, together with improving on our internal enterprise resource or IT functionality, it's able to also assist us when we deal with the eNATIS and use the information that we receive from eNATIS for sound decision making. And then the next one is the percentage of workplace skills plan target implemented. And this is directly linked to having the right people in the right place at RTIA so that we can execute our mandate effectively and efficiently. So the targets there for 2017-18, 18-19, and 19-20 is to have an approved ERP model, pilot and test the ERP model, and then implement it. And this will also be linked to what National Treasury is trying to do in terms of developing an ERP system that the whole country can use. So we're not moving away from that, but we want to have a model in place so that when we do implement the ERP system, it's aligned to that. And then in terms of our work skills plan, we want to have 70% achieved in 2017-18, 80% achieved in 18-19, and I think we need to look at that. I think that should be 90% workplace skills plan implemented by 19-20. And that's to make sure that when our skills plan is implemented, we are hitting the ground running instead of catching up. On the next page, on page 24, the strategic objective there is to discourage the contravention of road traffic laws. Our key performance indicators are the percentage of received representations adjudicated within 21 days. We do have a time limit in terms of our act for adjudicating representations, so we need to make sure that we track that is done within 21 days. And develop the alternative funding model, which I spoke to earlier. So the medium-term targets there are 100% representations adjudicated within 21 days, and it stays 100% across the board for the rest of the MTF medium-term period, because we can't plan to drop the ball when it comes to our core mandate of representations. And then development of a funding model for 2017-18, funding model enhanced and implemented in 2018-19, and again in 2019-20, funding model enhanced and implemented. So we implement in 2018-19, and then we enhance and we make sure that we keep improving on that until we've got a robust enough model. So it's not something that we want to, you do a document now, you implement it, and then you shelve it if things don't work out. We need to constantly monitor it to make sure that our funding remains intact and remains adequate and sufficient for as long as we are in existence. Okay, the next strategic objective is coordinate and facilitate readiness for national implementation of ARTO. Our key performance indicators there are the dissemination of ARTO information to issuing authorities and the percentage of issuing authority readiness for ARTO rollout. So the first one deals with engaging with the issuing authorities in terms of what their roles and responsibilities are, what they need to do in terms of ARTO, what they are doing in terms of ARTO, and new information that comes up. What I've realized is every time we engage with the issuing authorities, new information is coming up, technological innovations are being raised, and so we need to continue those engagements on an annual basis. In 2017-18, we want to have 18 outdoor support workshops conducted annually, which amounts to about 2 per province. We may have to do more, but we want it at a minimum of 2 per province. In 18-19, outdoor support workshops conducted nationally, and in 19-20, outdoor support workshops again conducted nationally. So once we've implemented outdoor, and I'm not saying that this preempts that, but once we've implemented outdoor, we're going to have to continue doing those outdoor support workshops to make sure that the legislation is being carried out in the way that it's intended across the board. So this is something that's going to be a long-term thing before and after the implementation of outdoor. In terms of the percentage of issuing authority readiness for outdoor rollout, we're looking at 80% readiness in 2017-18, and that is predominantly the biggest metros and some of the smaller ones. And then in 18-19 and 19-20, depending on the information of the 2017-18 readiness assessments, we'll be able to refine those targets for 2018-19 and 19-20 in terms of what percentage we want. Ideally, we're looking at 100%, but we do have some structural challenges in some of the municipalities or the issuing authorities that would bar them from having that 100%, and that's mainly a capacity issue. So we need to deal with those, and some of those things do take some time. They take some time, but it's also some things that we're not able to directly influence. The issuing authorities don't fall in our area of control, and so what we're able to do is with the information that we get, we're able to advise and we're able to share and disseminate information, and then the controlling bodies and the municipalities would be able to then implement the recommendations that we provide. Page 26, influence change in road user behavior. Our key performance indicator there, we've got number of campaigns implemented to influence a change in road user behavior and number of new outdoor service outlets established. So in 2017-18, we want to conduct 80 campaigns across the country. 2018-19, 100 campaigns across the country, and in 2019-20, 120 campaigns conducted across the country. This is also an initiative that has been running year on year, and we keep increasing on that just so that we make sure that we cover the country adequately and that we deal with whatever queries and issues that come up from the public adequately. And then in terms of the new service outlets, we want to add 5 additional service outlets every year for the 3-year period. And those are things like the kiosks, the mobile offices, the walk-in centers, digital or satellite offices, and also digital kiosks. So those are the initiatives we want to do in order to improve on access and service delivery. The effects on our entity by the legislation and the program in terms of our amendment bill and the challenges that we've experienced on page 27. The agency's operations are currently external to its control. This is in regards to the outdoor amendment bill. We are not in a position to sign off the amendment bill. So that is outside of our control in terms of the amendment bill getting passed and how it gets passed. That has got an impact on our way of doing business. We also engage with external parties that are part of our value chain, which we depend on, and they equally depend on us. So we do have some of those areas of lack of control, but it's where we require a lot more collaboration and interaction, and I think that's the normal functioning of government business. And we've got an inhibitive and prescriptive legislative framework currently with the amendment bill in its current form. Once the amendment bill is passed, we'll be able to introduce more flexibility in the way we do our work and in the way the legislation allows us to do or execute our mandate. We've got high costs of physical service, which would not just physical service but also the registered mail aspect. Our inability to realize the full implementation of ARTO is highly inhibitive because we're only operating in a small jurisdictional area, and that makes it difficult for us to really feel the full impact and the might of ARTO. and the dependency on third parties such as SAPO and issuing authorities, which I've mentioned, requires a more collaborative approach, and it also does mean that things do take a little bit longer when you're looking for solutions. Limited control over the core business system, which is the NCR, which is housed in the eNatus. We don't physically access the functioning of the system. We use the system, but we've got read-only or user-only rights for the system. So if there's a problem with the system, we have to ask somebody else to resolve that problem for us. We can't just go into the system with our IT developers and sort things out. So it does make it a little bit more difficult and a little bit more inhibitive for us to do our work. Again, it is the nature of our business, and we accept it. It's just a matter of how we collaborate with those that do run and own the system. Governance and separation of responsibilities with the board are some of the other challenges that we've had, and no further legislation can be presented to PCOD within the 2017-18 period. So, page 28. This is our MTF budget and cash flow.
Your time.
Is that it? Okay. I'll quickly squeeze through. So on page 28 is the budget that we have, where we plan to spend our money in terms of the four strategic objectives. And page 29 just speaks of the funding that we receive from the department. We're looking at receiving 17 million in the 2017-18 financial year and 11 million thereafter. So it is very low. We require a minimum of about 250 million for the actual full implementation of ARTO. So we are working against a very, very tight budget. The rest of the money that we do have, we generate ourselves, and we're looking at generating further funding that will assist us. We do have budgetary constraints, and they do affect the way we do our business, and they affect our ability to expand on how we offer our service to the public, but we do what we can with the limited amount of resources that we have. There is a proposal for increased revenue on page 30 that is envisaged in supporting regulations. That is the infringement road safety levy and the infringement clearance certificate, which will be free, but we are looking that the clearance certificate will improve on the collection rate significantly. And our expansion of AFTO nationally also will improve on the collection rate and on our ability to raise funds when we now start branching out and earning revenue in different ways. RDI currently has a very strong liquidity base. We're sitting at about 178 million as at the 31st of March. And this is the funding that we have available for national rollout. And however, you know, it is sufficient, but it is more than halfway there. So with the 178 million, we will be able to do quite a lot as far as rollout goes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. There we go. Presentation by Artia. Very elaborate. I think most of the issues that we have been raising with them have been adhered to, and I think we're going the right direction. Other issues, comments, questions from honorable members? Honorable Ramatakana, Honorable Sibanda, Honorable Advocate Mlaudzi, Honorable De Freitas. Let me start with Honorable Sibanda. It comes this way, and then go to the back.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'd like to commend about the presentation, but nevertheless, we'll be having some questions or clarity in that regard. Number one, Chairperson, I wanted you to request them, the RITIA, that may you please take us on board on how the delay in finalizing ARTO amendment is affecting your targets. That is number one. Number two, I was listening on their challenges, like number, they've listed the number of challenges. Okay, before I reach their challenges,
also the issue of ARTO, to also to indicate the caution which must be applied in advertising or spending on aspects that are not agreed to yet or are approved to be part of the bill before the committee. For example, let me make an example that the tender advert for service providers for proposed rehabilitation programs. Then also I'll go back on the challenges. There's a thing which is worrying me, Chairperson, the issue of administration of the agents. I mean, from your own input, you said you are not comfortable. What are the real issues about the issue of the administration of the agency? And then also, the challenges with the system, you indicated that the system is giving you problems while it must be, administrated by other people, something like that. And then to you to use it is coming very problematic. Lastly, Chairperson, on the challenges, high cost of physical service, help us how to reduce them on your own proposal, so that if there is a role which is dedicated to us as a committee, we can see on how to assist you. And also inability to realize full implementation of ARTO. Exactly what are the issues? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Just quickly, a few questions. Thank you very much for the presentation. I think it's very clear where it's going. Is going to. The direction is very clear. First question in relation to the capacity. I just want to find out in terms of the AG's concern and some of the red flag, do you have sufficient capacity to deal with those concerns in terms of the turnaround and what it is, if you say you do have? Linked to that, I mean, you do specify that you do have this committee, so audit committee, this committee, and so on. The audit committee, does it function? Is it functioning quite well? If it does function well, does the concern coming from the audit committee get attention from the CEO of the FTA? I noticed that you do have a couple of special meetings. So special meetings are always a worrying factor, the special meeting, and there are a number of them. I think I counted, and I finished the first hand. I went to the second hand accounting. Now, I was wondering, these special meetings, whether they have any financial implications in terms of those who attended as guest board members. Or sometimes these special meetings are a mechanism to increase participation with their financial implication. Don't they have an implication to the budget, that is budgeted for annum? I guess you would say you had the meetings, maybe, I don't know how many times you scheduled the meeting, but if you have meeting schedule and the special. Do they do that? Number three, so I like this enterprise model that you're talking about, that you want to develop. But how long will it take for you to develop this enterprise model that you're talking about? And then on page, let me just say, on targets, about Nasalibu, because I noticed on page 23 I take a note of that, and other pages subsequent later. You do have a goal of achieving a particular target of 70% or 80%, but it doesn't have the baseline. What baseline are we working from? Is it 70% of what? Of one or two or three? What is it that we're talking about? And then the campaigns, 80 campaigns two per province. That's a good idea, but the question is probably what is the focus and what is the reach? What is going to be the focus of it and the reach in terms of the planning? So that is some of the questions. Funding model, I think it's been spoken about for some time now, and I don't know when it's going to see the light of day.
No, thanks, Chip, and thanks to the CFO for the presentation. Yeah, the other questions has been elaborated by the latter honorable members. So I wanted to know about do we have board members here, honorary delegates, or they're all officials? Because some of the questions like this...
It's all officials.
Oh, okay. It's all officials.
Only officials.
Okay. So maybe you can extend this to the board members, that most of the meeting, the RTA, only comes the officials without board. Sometimes one member of the board, but we really sometimes want to engage the board as accounting authority of RTA. The other concern is about the 80 campaigns of influence in page, I think it's page 25. So this campaign, 80%, where is the focus of this campaign? Where do you focus? Rural municipalities or only the metros? Because I can see even the rollout. The readiness of the national rollout is still at 80% on page 25. Is not this also affecting this small rural municipality, because maybe the campaign is not yet there, so that they can include this on their IDPs or on their budget financial to assist the RTA on that level? Because in terms of the 2015-2016 budget, it was confirmed by the minister that the national rollout is going to be effective to all the IEs. So we will be like to know why now you only say you will only the state of readiness is 80%. Is it not a failure by your entity not to roll it 100%, because we didn't want to left others behind. So the other question is about the commitment you make on page 27, but no further legislation to be presented to PCOT within 2017-18. So I don't think this statement, you put your head in the block. What if something happened you want to push to Parliament for 2017-18? Because 2017-18 is going to expire next year, March. So legislation is a living document. Anything can happen. You can think to amend. But if you put this in the public document, tomorrow you can be challenged even in court if you put the legislation to be court. The last thing is about the budget. The budget, page 29, you said you required a funding of ideally 250 million. So maybe you can also tell us how much do you generate per annum normally, and how much do you get from the national fiscal, so that we can be sure you want this 250 from which side, and for how long are you, how much is your shortfall for what you are generating, as you said, most of the fund you are generating yourself. Thank you, Chairperson. So at the beginning of the presentation it talks about what the mandate is of the RTIA, and then on page 4 it talks about contributing to economic growth and job creation, which is not part of the mandate. It's a very worthy sentiment, but it's not part of the mandate. And then it's talking about enterprise development programs and all that kind of thing, which doesn't align to their mandate. So I'd just like some comment on that, because I'm trying to link it up. And why is this being brought up? It's not their mandate. Then on... And on page 17, I'm trying to understand this table. Am I right in saying is that there's a target that's been set for 2015-2020, the number of representations adjudicated would be 151,000. And the number of drivers with demerit points allocated is over 1 million, 1.3 million. Is that correct? And it also talks about a number of licenses operating cards suspended. So are we saying, is the RTI saying that they actually want a target for this? Surely the RTI should be wanting a target of zero in all these things, in the ideal world. I'm trying to understand how it is that you're creating a target for people that are doing the wrong thing. So if you just unpack that. On that same page, and it's throughout the document, it talks about developing an alternative funding model. But are they saying that they are still going to develop such a model? So there's nothing on the table. It's kind of very infant stage. Or have they developed something? And if so, what is the detail in this regard? on page 19, I don't know what happened to the numbering, but on that page. It talks here and throughout the document, it talks about one of the strategic goals is to influence change in road user behavior and discourage the contravention of road traffic laws. Now that to me is part of a road safety campaign, so perhaps I could just explain what is the difference. What are they doing that would be different to the RTMC, and how does this fit in with their mandate? And then on that same page, 19, talks about performance indicator, number of campaigns implemented to influence change. First of all, what is comprised of this campaign? What form do these campaigns take, and what informs these campaigns? You have to design a campaign based on some information. So on what is that based? And the idea is to change road user behavior, but our statistics are showing that road user behavior is getting worse, not better. So I'd like to hear more about that. Mention that. So the next page is kind of talk about road safety. Then it talks on page 22 and in various other places throughout the document. It talks about introducing mobile offices, walk-in centres and so forth. All stuff that internationally has been shown where various entities and companies and so forth are moving away from, and the RTIA are now moving into. So what I mean is, for example, walk-in centres and what Americans called experience centres, mobile offices, were in vogue in the 80s. That was introduced because that was the way to go. And all that's been
moved away from, and online things happening online where people are. In other words, not getting people to go somewhere, but taking information to the people. So I don't understand what informed these kind of decisions, because all this type of reaching the public and creating a footprint is very old. You know, modern footprints will go to where the people are, not the other way around. Because the reality is people are not going to go to service centers. They want to do it online, they want to do it on their phone, whatever the case is. So I want to understand on what basis is this decision is made. And there is nothing being said about using technology, using apps, Mobis, linking online, all that kind of thing. So I'd like to unpack it a little more. And that's also, by the way, much cheaper and much more effective than doing these walk-in, expensive walk-in centers and so forth. I want to... one thing that I did find encouraging, page 23, that was being said, is that stats need to be developed that will influence sound decision-making. That should be one of the focuses that RTI should be looking at, because it's not happening. Instead of wasting its time on all this other stuff, which actually isn't their mandate. So I'd like to unpack a little bit more there, because that should be one of the strategic goals, is to take this information, because at the moment there's nobody. The last time this information was collated was 1998. And since then there's been no information that's been kept that would then be used to develop road safety campaigns and all that kind of thing. So that certainly should be a target, because that would fall within their mandate. But I'd like to hear some more on that, some comment on that. Then page 25 talks about auto support workshops and so forth. It doesn't indicate who the audience would be and what the objective of these workshops are. It's auto support workshops. So what is it? Is it explaining what the auto bill is and so forth? I mean, what is the objective? And how do you measure its success? How would these workshops be measured? And, you know, the size of South Africa is the size of Western Europe. 18 workshops to me doesn't sound like a lot. So, you know, it all depends on the audience and so forth. So I'd like to hear a little bit more about that. The same with the next page, page 26, which talks about 80 campaigns, and to me that looks like it's road safety campaigns. How was this number of 80 reached, and what form would these campaigns take? Who would be the audience, and how would you measure success? In my mind, I would imagine you would measure success by the reduction of road deaths. But, you know, I don't know. But also, this to me sounds something that RTMC should be doing. And then again, it's mentioned on the same page, additional service outlets and so forth, which is something with the international trend people are moving away from. And we're trying to introduce the 20-year-old ideas. I want to then also just reinforce what Honourable Sibande had said. A lot of this is based on a presumption of something that hasn't happened. It's presuming that the auto will be amended, and will be amended based on proposals that have been tabled. You can't plan a strategy, you can't make decisions on something that's not concrete, that's not real. I'll be very surprised if the auto amendment bill gets done even this financial year. So I'd really like to hear some more. I don't understand how a strategy can be based on kind of something maybe might happen. And what if those proposals that have been tabled are all rejected and completely new kettle of fish comes in? What then? You know, there'll be changes. So I'd like to just reinforce what Honourable Sibande was talking about. I'd like to hear some more about that. And then one thing that really jumped out for me on page 30 is a proposal to... include a road safety levy. I mean, if that's not insulting enough to any road user in this country, where we have the, one of the worst road safety records in the world, we're now going to ask them to also pay on top of that. So not only are they all dying, but they're also going to pay for it. I'm just left gobsmacked. So I'd like to know, on what was this based, what empirical research was done to reach this, and what would this levy be used for? I'd like to unpack it a little. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'm going to give you 5 minutes to respond between the three of you. You will share 10 minutes. Some of the issues probably they will need to be brought back in writing to the committee. Go ahead.
Thank you very much for all your comments. I'll respond to some of the questions and then I'll hand over to my colleagues to respond to as many of them as we can. I hope you don't mind me speaking fast so that we can cover as many questions as we can, and whatever we don't cover we'll respond in writing. So in terms of Honourable Sibanda, how is the delay in finalising bills affecting our targets? It's affecting our business more than affecting our targets. So we do have our core mandate, and in our core mandate, the four aspects that we've mentioned in terms of our strategic plan. So if you go directly to our act, you will see there that RTIA's mandate is to educate road users, change the road user behavior, and I'm paraphrasing, I'm not reading it verbatim from the act. So the elements, these four strategic objectives that we've listed here are actually directly linked to our strat plan. So the delays in the amendment bill are just making it a little bit more difficult for us to execute on our mandate effectively and efficiently. It's not that we are targeting things that we are unable to execute on. Remember, we did change our strategic objectives so that we could deal with what we're able to execute on that is in our control immediately right now. So some of the things that were linked to our amendment bill, we had to remove from our strategic objectives and deal with them sort of offline until we're able to bring them back. And then caution on spending on items not yet approved in the bill. We take that caution, and that's also part of the reason why we weren't able to finalize or execute everything in our procurement plan last year. There were some things there that related to either the amendment bill or the national rollout, and we were unable to execute on that because we didn't have those two things in place yet. So we don't spend unless it is absolutely necessary and unless we know that we're going to get value out of what we spend. So thank you for that. What are the real issues in terms of administration of the agency? One is having a robust system that will assist us in effective decision making. So that is that ERP system that I spoke of, which we've now included in terms of what we're targeting to implement or to put it to have in place and then implement over the 3-year period. Staff capacity, we want to increase our staff capacity, but we don't want to increase if we don't have certainty over the amendment bill and the rollout. So we can't increase our staff capacity until we're in a place where we know that we're going to roll out. So we're sort of operating on a very thin staff and capacity base in terms of our resources as well, because we don't want to have everything we're supposed to have in place only to find that the delays are a little bit longer or extend beyond this current year. So those are some of the issues that we're dealing with, and that we don't want to have 100% when we're not sure of the 100%. So we're trading with caution. The high cost of fiscal service and how we reduce that. The way we want to reduce the high cost of fiscal service is to introduce more electronic means. But again, we didn't put it in the strategic plan in terms of having better technology or more electronic means of doing business, because is dependent on the amendment bill. So the act, the, our current act speaks of registered mail for service of notices. So if we want to do anything other than that, if we want to introduce technologies, we need to get that changed first. So we're not putting that in our strategic plan because it is dependent on the amendment bill. So we want to wait for the amendment bill first, and then we can introduce better technologies. What are the issues in terms of the inability to fully implement ARDO? I think I have touched on some of those. One is the amendment bill, and it would have to be promulgated. So we need to we need ARDO to be promulgated nationally, and then we can go nationally and implement in throughout the country. Some issuing authorities across the country in terms of the municipalities have indicated an interest to also take part in piloting ARDO, but again, we can't do that because we need then promulgation to happen at a presidential level. So those are the two key things that we are dealing with from a challenge of implementing ARDO point of view. Some of the questions raised by Honourable Ramadlakana in terms of when will the funding model happen? The funding model premise that we have currently is dependent on national rollout. So we've engaged with, let's say, members of the private sector in terms of the information that they'd be interested in terms of the work that we do that they'd be interested in, but it has to be on a national scale. What we're doing currently in Joburg and in Pretoria is interesting information for them, but they can't actually do anything with it unless they're dealing with a national scale so that you provide the same service to all your customers around the country, or you provide the same parameters to all the customers around the country. So, for example, when we engage with insurance companies, they're very interested in the infringement information of drivers, so that they can price the insurance products differently or better or with more information. We're unable to sell that information to them, or we're unable to package that information for them. It doesn't have to be on an individual basis, but the statistics are available. We're unable to package those statistics and provide those in the private sector because we don't have ARDO operating nationally. Our database is limited to one of the e-natives, which is what is happening in Johannesburg and in Tshwane and in the Gauteng province. So those are the sorts of things that we engage with, that we're looking into. That's the information and the research that we're doing, but we're unable to actually move forward with that because if it's not operating nationally, then it becomes difficult for people or for us to package the information and use it in a meaningful way for decision-making, either for ourselves or that we can actually provide to the rest of the public. Again, also the infringement clearance certificate, which is a great tool to have, we can't implement it right now because it has to be something that's done nationally, similar to how the SARS clearance certificate works. AG concerns and red flags and the audit committee functioning. I would say yes, the audit committee does function well, and it is well capacitated with people which have the right skills. So we've got people there who have worked in or have got experience in auditing, risk management, financial management. We've got some CAs as well in there. So we've got quite a nice wide range of people in the audit and risk committee that deal with audit and risk matters effectively and efficiently, and AG concerns and the red flags that have been raised. Yes, we do have sufficient capacity to turn them around. They were mainly raised around in information management or the performance information. So we've looked at different ways of doing things because the more you do things the same, the more things stay the same. So we're looking at ways of doing things differently, crafting our strategy objectives differently, working with experts out there in the field that do deal with strategy so that we're able to take a fresh, clear third-party eye and change the way we craft our strategic objectives, change the way we do things, and then we have better results. The other questions about the board and the audit committee, I'll leave to the advocate to speak to. How long will the ERP take? We envisaged for proper ERP to be executed properly, we're looking at a three-year time period. So we have to start with a model. We have to look at what the needs analysis is. We have to present a work plan. Once we've got the work plan, once we've thoroughly and robustly engaged internally in terms of what the needs and the requirements are, then we can move to an implementation or the building or development stage. After we've done the building and development, then we can do implementation. So we're looking at roughly a three-year period to deal with the ERP or to implement or bring the ERP on board so that it's done properly. If it's done wrong or it's done quickly or it's done incorrectly, we can waste a lot of money and the system won't do anything for us. So we have to be very careful how we approach the ERP implementation. I think questions around the baseline of the targets we can provide in writing. They are documented in more detail in our strategic, in our APP and our strategic plan, so we can provide those in writing. The focus on the outreach campaigns, I'll ask Mr. Mega to deal with that. There were a lot of questions around the 80 campaigns and the campaigns and what the campaigns are, what's the focus, what's the area, what is the baseline, and so on. I'll ask Mr. Mega to deal with those. Honorable Mlaozi, again, the board questions I'll leave to to Advocate Bilgwena to deal with. And in terms of no further legislation presented to the PCOT, what we were looking at is to say, let's give ourselves a year to deal with, if the amendment bill is passed, let's give ourselves a year to deal with whatever we need to deal with in terms of the amendment bill, execute, and then after the 2017-18 year, if there's a need to come back, we probably would come back. But we didn't want to say, let's do the amendment bill now, and then 3 months later we come back to you to change the act. We need to be able to see what is working, what is not working, how it's working. And yes, you are correct, it is a live document that, in terms of legislation, a legislative document or an act is a live document, but we need to actually see what is working, what is not working, implement as much as we can, and then when we do hit walls or brick walls, then we analyze, and then we can come back if there's a need to come back. Okay, and then Honorable De Freitas, okay, let me allow my colleagues then to respond, because a lot of the questions were around the campaigns and the targets.
Thank you, Chairperson. There was an issue around the ED, why the ED was brought into the equation, whereas it's not part of the mandate of the agency. And the response is that we brought ED into this conversation because of us aligning ourselves with the objectives of the National Development Plan, as well as the fact that as an agency, you've taken a decision to actually use the enterprises as one of our resourcing mechanisms. So in other words, instead of expanding through national-based network, so we've decided that we're going to use a flexible method of expansion through the enterprises. So that is why we sort of like are putting it into the APP. And also the issue of why we're using outdated methods of engagements with the market in terms of the working service outlets. Yes, we are going to be using like other technologically driven methods of engagement with the marketplace, but also taking into cognizance that we are dealing with infringers at different LSM levels. And you take, for instance, your taxi drivers, taxi owners, you know, they don't have access to technology, so you're going to have to use a different methods, you know, and also truck drivers as well. So it's one of our methods of diversification, you know, so not that we are departing from the technologically based methods of engagement. The issue around board and committee meetings, excessive board and committee meetings, yes, it looks very odd, you know, that, you know, we had so many special meetings. And the reason for that is that, you know, last year, you know, the board and the HR committee meeting had to engage in the, you know, discussion around the CEO's contract. And there were various discussions that took place in that regard. And secondly, the organization introduced a new performance management system where the HR committee and the board had to have multiple engagements in that regard. I think, and the issue, and the issue from Honorable Mlaozi around why the board is not, you know, presenting itself to the committee, I will have to get a written response from the chairperson of the board, and we'll present it to the committee.
Thank you, Chair. Simply to address the issue pertaining to the 80 campaigns, Advocate Billy Gwana pointed out that we have got different categories within in South Africa based on NSM, We also consider the geographical spread of our customers, the road users. We are not completely abandoning all those conventional technological inventions. We are going to do that. However, we also need to service people sitting in the rural areas where infrastructure does not allow for those people to use technology, like somebody who's sitting in Cape Town or in Johannesburg. But we take guidance on that. We will periodically implement on those things. We will also ask the question on how specifically what is sitting in this within this 80 campaigns. We have detailed that in the operational plan, and we can, in our response to other questions, package that. We are currently using Twitter. RTIA, young people and old people are talking about RTIA on Twitter, Facebook, and we are also to implement the apps. We are talking so much about them in the 17-18 operational plans as well, but we thought we cannot put everything into the annual performance plan. We also took guidance from the Parliament to say that we need to be strategic when we write the APP and the strategic plan, because most of our targets, you correctly said it, that we're not smart. And we said, let's go back to the department to get guidance on how to set these smart targets, when we also got a facilitator who is schooled on these issues of strategies and the like. We were able to set smart targets in the 17-18 APP. Page 17, Honorable Defreitas spoke about page 17, the numbers that have got to do with 151,000, the 1,372, and the 1,372. All those, we took your guidance. You said, these things are not smart and are not applicable. You cannot set targets towards failure. Therefore, depart from that what we call pattern and come back to the normal way of eradicating all those what we call injuries on the road and the accidents on the road. You will notice that in the under the changes to the strategic plan, we clearly detailed that is the old pattern, and we are departing from that. We have indicated what is it that we are going to do. And we said it is not the business of the RTIA to sit in the on the road and converse on how what numbers will come into the organization in terms of the representations or the cancellations of those what called driving licenses and the permits. We said no. Let's do our business in line with the mandate that is outlined in the Act. And we welcome that guidance. We have done that. Hence, we are no longer speaking to the 151,000 in representations and the like. We were simply demonstrating the manner in which we moved from the old way of doing things into the correct way of doing things. Chair, we will package other answers in the response that will be coming to Parliament on in relation to what other members have asked. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honourable members. I think today it's me who's pressed for time. I'll leave the rest of the things to my colleagues who will be here and rush for my flight. Honourable Ramatlakane. Are there other matters that still needs to be engaged with on RTIA, Honourable Defreitas? Not on RTIA. Matters on RTIA, Honourable Members? If that is the case, then I will release RTIA. Thank you very much for the presentation. The rest of the issues, which actually has not been properly dealt with, let's get them in writing, so that members can be able to acquaint ourselves with what has been questioned here. Thank you very much. Honourable members, I said that there was an invitation that came from the minister on the launching of the trains on Tuesday. Are we going there? Honorable Ramatakana, Honorable Mulaudzi, 1 minute each, and then Honorable De Freitas.
No, Chair, I think that's part of oversight. We should accept the invitation and go and see those new trains that are launched.
Chairperson, although I don't know what will happen on the Tuesday because we have
Tuesday we're having CBS today
and RAF and PRASA.
And RAF.
And I think because PRASA is part of that trains we are going to watch, they will send an apology because of that. So I think it's the best way for us to go and attend and honor that invitation. So that when we talk about the trains, they talk about the trains, or also us, who are representing the people, we must know what we are talking about, this train. So I support that we, honor the invitation.
Chair, our budget speech, our budget debate is on the 23rd of May. We need to have completed all these hearings long before then and have prepared a report. So I'm proposing that we continue our meetings on Tuesday. We can always then arrange an oversight to go and have a look at these trains. They have to be specifically at the launch. I understand and I agree we do want to look at the trains, but we don't have to specifically be at the launch. And then just to respond that, you know, RAF won't be there, well, you know, they've been asked to be here on Tuesday, and they will be here, and that's all there is to it. And the CRBTA. So I'm proposing that we continue because we actually just don't have any days available left to before the budget debate, and that we then arrange an oversight very soon to go and have a look at the trains. Thank you.
Honourable members, we don't have much time in terms of meeting with the parastatals, and I, when engaging and interacting with the acting group CEO, I said to him, we are expecting him to divide his force into the force that will go and launch the trains and the force that will come and make a presentation here. But also I thought that maybe we can release maybe one or two members from the portfolio committee to go and be part of the launch of the trains. If all members would be here, then we have one member or two members that goes and launch the train, and then we remain with the other members. But unfortunately, the alternate member from EFF, yes, IFP, EFF, is the same. So if we have the alternate member from IFP and our other member who's gone to tourism, then we will still have quorum, and we release you, Honorable Mlauzi and Honorable Ramatlakana, to go and be part of the lounge. And they were able to continue with the work.
Bring us a takeaway.
Hey, I'm just thinking out loud, but I have indicated already to the acting group CEO that there is no how, because they skipped last week Wednesday when they were supposed to be here, and there is no how we can be able to keep on shifting for them. They must just divide themselves into the group that comes here and the group that goes for the launch. But as for honourable members, I stand to be advised. Honourable Sibande.
Chairperson, I think the timing of the launching is caught us below the belt. And what is the key challenge to us? It's about the finalization of this process which we are dealing about, because the debate is very close. And also, I'm scared of the deadlines. whereby we are going to, like now, we are together as different parties, but at the end, if we we don't comply, we might find ourselves fighting each other about the compliance. So to avoid a lot of things, I'll propose us that let's leave it now, because we're not sure about the members who are going to be available on Tuesday. If we're definitely sure, therefore I was going to agree that we send people.
No, I think...
Honourable members, probably it will be very fair if we are able to do our job here and say, probably as part of oversight, part of the things that we'd want to do post budgets is to go and be part of, just to go and see the trades, because this has been a topic really, really spoken about in the Republic of South Africa. And the proposal that members go, I had made a proposal that maybe two members can represent us now. There's a counter which is saying we're not sure who will be here, we may end up not having a quorum. I stand to be advised, quick, before I leave. Honourable De Freitas, Honourable Ramatlaka.
Chair, I really urge that we have a quorum on Tuesday. It's very important. And the other motivation that I would want to say that we do a visit later on is, you know, with a launch, it's just a, you know, a launch. Yeah. Whereas if we do a proper oversight visit, we can ask questions, we can interrogate, we can really get into the depth of the whole thing. So that's my motivation to my colleagues who maybe feel that they should go on Tuesday instead. Thank you.
Honourable Ramatlakane.
So, Chair, I hear the motivation of colleagues. I think it's a good motivation. But I'm not sure what we are voting on Tuesday, on what issue we're voting. We're getting a presentation from the department as we have received them today. So I don't, and if we're receiving presentation, I think the rules is very clear that we can have, that it doesn't have to be 12 members, at least the minimum is 4. Now, the argument that is being presented, it suggests that we're not even sure that we'll have 4 members here. I don't buy it, because it's over the top. But I am willing to accept the ruling that nobody goes. All I was doing just to point out that I think the rush of that motivation is a scary motivation, but it's actually no scary motivation. You at least minimum of 4 people to continue the presentation. But I will accept your ruling.
Chair, we are 6 people here. I'm prepared to stay to carry on with the work, and if Honourable Ramatlakane would like to go and Malawutsi, I mean, we can decide here. We are 6 people here.
Honourable Ramatlakane, Honourable Malawutsi, you will be recused for Tuesday to go and attend. We will remain being the 4 of us. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
I'm not sure. No,